Do you want me to say stuff?
Yeah.
Do you want me to say what's up? What's up?
Okay, so I'll say I'm Todd Miles.
Yo.
All right. I'll say I'm Todd Miles. You can say you're Ryan.
We fire.
That's right. Are we ready? Are we recording now?
Yeah, we've been recording the whole time.
Okay. well, let's just
so
keep
good.
That. Let's just keep
Eric
that.
Eric is, we're losing our jobs.
All right.
Biblical wisdom and fearing the Lord and bringing honor to God looks significantly different than what it looks like to be wise in the eyes of the world or even to be prospering in the eyes of the world.
You are listening to Food Trucks in Babylon, a Western Seminary podcast. I am Todd Miles.
I'm Ryan Lister.
And today our guest is professor and author Dominic Hernandez to help us mine the gold in the book of Proverbs. Dominic is a professor of Old Testament interpretation at Southern Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky, and the director of Southern's online Hispanic program. He's also the author of Proverbs, Pathways to Wisdom. So join us as we take a tour through the wild, strange world of Proverbs with our friend Dominic Hernandez.
Dominic, to help our audience get to know you a little bit, how did you become professor of Old Testament interpretation at Southern Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky?
Well, everybody has quite a story, and this story is a long story, but I'll try to make it brief, and you're welcome to pry as much as you want.
When I
completed my doctoral studies at Bar-Ilan University in the Tel Aviv metropolitan area in Israel. And as I was finishing, I heard about a position at Moody Bible Institute in Spokane, Washington, and I applied and was invited to be a professor at Moody in Spokane, Washington at the aviation campus teaching biblical studies. And while I was there, unfortunately, that part of that campus closed down. And so
not because of you,
that were right? there, I don't think so. That has neither been confirmed nor denied.
Okay, very good.
But all of the professors there were sort of thinking about their future. And during that time, I had already taught a class here at Southern Seminary and had some good relationships with some people here. And they reached out to me, and I'm very grateful that things worked out. So that was in 2018. And now I'm in my third academic year here at Southern Seminary, where I'm a professor of Old Testament interpretation, and I lead the online Spanish language program, which we have 660 students or so studying with us in Spanish.
So I remember the first time I met you was in Tel Aviv. I had been asked to come and do some teaching for Jews for Jesus, and I walk into this room where the fellow who was kind of hosting me said, "Hey, this is where you're going to do most of your teaching." Oh, and there's a class going on here right now. And it was a class for the Jews for Jesus staff there in, I think, biblical Aramaic, and you were teaching it in Hebrew. And I looked down at you. I don't understand a word of this at all, but everyone is just totally captivated as you are teaching
biblical Aramaic
in modern Hebrew to them. And I just thought, geez, who is this guy?
Well, biblical Aramaic's important, and Hebrew language speakers need to learn it as well, right?
Well, Todd, is that right?
Yes. Although, you know, I'm actually prepping right now a sermon from Daniel 4, and my Hebrew is not awesome, but my Aramaic is non-existent.
Less than awesome.
Okay. Less than awesome would be the case.
Well, it sounds like you need to go back to Tel Aviv or go hang out with.
Well, I don't speak modern Hebrew. That would have done me no good at all, right? So, anyway, your family, Dominic.
Sure, my wife's name is Gabby. We've been married for 18 years by God's grace. Gabby's originally from Mexico and moved to the United States in her early 20s, and we married shortly thereafter. 10 years ago, we had a little boy named Yair, and he's full of energy, loves to play sports, very competitive, just fun little boy. And 4 years ago, actually, when we were living in Israel, we had a little girl named Yael, And she also is very energetic. So, you know, I joke around and say, my wife is from Mexico. I am Puerto Rican. Our son was born in New Jersey and lived at least half of his life in Israel. And our daughter was born in Jerusalem and we've now moved back to the United States. And so on our passports, there's no country, just the word confused. All of us are confused.
I like that. I like that. One question I've had, I mean, so you work for Southern's online Hispanic program. And so I'm sure you're engaged very much with the Hispanic church. Could you just help us see how sort of what maybe sort of the modern Western mindset, the English speaking church, especially in the United States, could learn from the Hispanic church? What's one really important thing?
You know, it's interesting that you say that. I probably need to refine the question before I even talk about it, because when people say Hispanic or Latino or whatever the adjective might be to refer to either Spanish speakers or people of, some Latino descent, you know, that's really still very, very diverse. Like I said, my wife is from Mexico and I'm Puerto Rican. And so still, at least once a week, she'll say something and I'll say, what are you saying? What do you mean by that? I guess you don't have, but that's the thing. There are many different cultures, Spanish speaking cultures, obviously all beautiful, right? But there are so many different cultures and people. You have Argentinians and you have people from the Caribbean and you have people from Central America, and all of those cultures are very different per se. So it's difficult to just say, this is what I think the North American church, which is also very diverse, the North American church should learn from the Spanish-speaking church. I'd say that one thing that Spanish-speaking churches generally share that I think I'd like to see in many other churches, all churches, is that there's this sense when we're together that we're not really looking at the clock. We're spending time with one another. We're delighting ourselves in the presence of one another and having fellowship. Lots of times services are much longer and fellowship goes on for much longer after the services. And so there really is sort of a sense of strong relationship and family in a lot of the Spanish speaking churches and the Latino communities of which I've been a part. But I'm sure that that is not specific to Spanish-speaking churches. But that's just something that I really appreciate about a lot of them.
Yeah, that's really helpful. You start off your book with a pretty strong declaration about jigsaw puzzles. So why do you hate jigsaw puzzles?
That's interesting, because when I was young and I was a teenager, not dissimilar to many teenagers, I was perfectly fine with messes and things being out of order and the like. But as I grew, I started to have problems with things being out of order. I started to have problems with things looking messy and not fitting into their spots and stuff like that. So that's really what's problematic now about jigsaw puzzles for me. I have a difficult time looking at all of these things out of order, all different colors all over the place. I know it sounds crazy, but at least I'm self-aware, right?
Yeah, that's right. I guess so. I was hoping there'd be like I choked on a jigsaw puzzle piece when I was a child or something, but
no, it's way worse than that.
Traumatic experience.
That's right.
I wish you had joked on. That's not what he means. That's not what we would.
Yeah. Todd just called me monk. That was awesome.
That is. Yes.
Thank you.
So that to help us to bridge from that intro statement of hating jigsaw puzzles to the Book of Proverbs, right? The Book of Proverbs, is it a collection of puzzle pieces? I mean, how do we bridge that?
No, brother. I think I said something about never being a fan of jigsaw puzzles. I think you might get people turning off the show quickly if you say something about me hating jigsaw puzzles.
I took it. I put extra on. I'm sorry.
And the reason why I'm not a fan, again, I reiterate, is just sort of this uneasiness I have with things being out of order. And that is sort of how many readers approach the Proverbs. We look at them and they seem sort of like these scattered thoughts or scattered sayings that we don't quite know what to do with them. And so I think many readers approach the Proverbs like I approach jigsaw puzzles. There's a bunch of things sort of out of order and we don't know how to put it together.
Yeah, very good. You don't hate the Book of Proverbs.
I don't.
You don't hate jigsaw puzzles. You don't hate the Book of Proverbs. That's good.
No, I'm definitely okay with the Book of Proverbs.
All right. Well, let's jump into your book, Proverbs, Pathways to Wisdom. Tell us about why you wrote the book. What was the motivation for it? What catalyzed it?
Well, I really love, well, first of all, I love the entire Bible. I have training in Old Testament and Semitic languages, and more specifically, I wrote my dissertation on the book of Job. And so I started to focus much more on what is traditionally called biblical wisdom literature. And more specifically, along the same lines, I'm interested in poetry and biblical poetry. So I was asked if I would do a book like this by the acquisitions editor for Abingdon, the editor. And I really wanted to do Job, but there was going to be some problems with Job. This is a pretty short study. I just think that it ended up being a better fit that I would do Proverbs, which I very much love as well. And when I got into it, I started to really enjoy just reading through the book of Proverbs over and over and over again. You know, this book has no footnotes. I was asked to do a study with very few footnotes, if not very, and I tried to make it a point not to put in any footnotes, just to read the book of Proverbs and reflect on the book of Proverbs.
So who is the book for? What's your target audience as you're writing?
The target audience is for people that have read the book of Proverbs and really need a guide to go through it thematically. It's not a verse by verse type of commentary. That's not the type of book that it is. It's much more, to go back to our illustration, intended for people that have looked at that jigsaw puzzle and go, how do I put this together? What are some of the corner pieces? What are some of the major themes and movements of the book? How can I work through this and get something out of it for my daily life? It's intended for that type of audience.
So just to build off that, how would you describe, what is the Book of Proverbs? Is it an owner's manual? Is it a collection of quotes? How do you describe the Book of Proverbs?
Well, I think one of the problems that we have with some of the biblical books is that we put it into sort of one category, right? And I think that if we're going to categorize the Book of Proverbs, it should be categorized into several different categories. Is it wisdom? Yes. Is it instruction? Yes. Is it poetry? Yes. Can it be broken up into several different parts? Yes. Is it a full composition that has in and of itself themes and movements and motifs? Yes. So I think it's all of those things.
Good. So help our audience there now. Maybe not everyone who's listening seminary education or has even thought about precisely what a proverb is. So how would you define that? Let's start defining some terms. What is a proverb?
Sure. A proverb is normally a short adage in which wisdom is imparted at some level. So in the biblical book of Proverbs, we have many, many sayings, hundreds of sayings in which there's a line normally directed, at least it comes off this way, from a wise person to a child or a son, imparting wisdom to that particular person. And that adage is normally very, very short. It normally consists of one sentence in two parts or one sentence in three parts.
So if a proverb is after wisdom, what is wisdom then?
Well, that is a great question. And to be honest with you, that to a certain extent is disputed even in my field, right? What exactly is wisdom? Is there sort of a wisdom tradition? I think what we end up seeing in the biblical books that are traditionally called wisdom literature is the impartation of this practical application of the things that we see in the Torah, in the first five books of the Bible. So in the first five books of the Bible, we see that Israel was told to live certain ways that reflected the character of their God. They were told to, for example, honor the weaker people in society, honor widows. They were told many different things in the Torah. And we see later application of that in different ways in the book of Proverbs. So I think a lot of the book of Proverbs, a lot of what we would call wisdom from the book of Proverbs really comes from God's instruction to the people of Israel prior to these Proverbs being written.
So a quick question with a very short answer to avoid totally geeking out. Is wisdom a literary genre in the Bible?
I would say probably yes. That's my answer for now. Subject to changing this. I think that what we have, I need to listen, there's going to be a couple of friends that are going to listen to this and they're going to be like, oh, so just give me 1 second here. I'm just going to say, I think that when you compare the motifs that we see in biblical wisdom literature, particularly books like Proverbs and Job, to the motifs that we see in the same types of literature in the ancient Near East, I think we have a broad category that even transcends the Bible. So I think there is something like a wisdom genre in the Bible in the ancient Near East.
That's good. I that's helpful. And I want to build off that motif idea and going back to what you're saying about what you're doing with this book, specifically sort of giving those big ideas, those big themes that you see in the book of Proverbs and helping that or organize the book, but also helping readers see how it organized, how they read this particular text. So could you just tell us what some or maybe all the recurring themes that you see in the book of Proverbs and help us see how they speak to us today? Because I think Proverbs is after that.
Yeah. So I'll happy to talk to you about the recurring themes that I see. This is not a comprehensive list. Right, obviously, right. As you go back, one of the things that I continue to say in the book is that as you go back to the Proverbs, right, it's sort of like putting the puzzle together again. You don't always put it together in the same exact way. You learn new things. But I think that we have at least six repetitive themes in the book of Proverbs. And I mentioned the Torah earlier. These, I think, are practical. These themes relate practical wisdom based upon previous instruction that was given to the people of Israel. For example, one of the major themes is one's relationship to their family, right? So family ties and the relationship within the family, how we are to honor each other within the family, particularly children honoring their parents. Another one is the usage of the tongue, the usage of speech. Tongue is a metonym for speech. How do we use our words? Another theme is humility. We repeatedly see humility showing up, or the need to be humble showing up in the Proverbs. The other one is diligence in work, working hard, earning honest wages. Mm-hmm. So working hard in order to earn that which you deserve through hard work. And then I think a huge, very important theme is caring for vulnerable people. We see this repeatedly throughout the Proverbs, as well as the Torah, the first five books of the Bible. We see that God wants his people to care for those that are vulnerable.
That's good.
Yeah, and I think we want to definitely return to that in a moment. While we're still thinking definitionally, fear of the Lord is huge in the book of Proverbs. What do we mean by fear of the Lord? Or we should say, what does the Bible mean by fear of the Lord?
Right. So in the book, I give an illustration about fearing snakes and fearing the Lord. And I think this is probably an apt illustration just now, if I could briefly reiterate it. And that is, I'm kind of scared of snakes. Well, I think I'm kind of scared is an understatement. You know, I see them and like my hands get all clammy and I kind of want nothing to do with them. And I think that when we hear fear of the Lord, particularly in the English language, we might think of that type of fear, like God is sort of in the sky and he's peering down, ready to zap people that are disobeying. And I don't think that that's what the Proverbs is getting at really at all. I think that this concept of fearing the Lord is a healthy fear, a revering type of fear in which one has option to go on the pathway of wisdom and wants to perpetually honor God with their life. That is a way of revering God. And in a sense, I think that that's what the Bible's talking, or the book of Proverbs is talking about when it talks, or when it mentions fear of the Lord.
Yeah, I think that's good. And something that you were alluding to earlier, but just to sort of press in a little bit more, why do you think Christians at times bypass the book of Proverbs?
That's a great question, because I have repeatedly thought about why Christians bypass certain sections of the Old Testament as an Old Testament professor anyway. Really. I mean, think about it. So that's, you guys got a laugh out of that, but I've spent like part of my professional career wondering why this is the case. And I will say that there's a couple of things that I think, first of all, if we could just briefly, not to beat a dead horse, but go back to the puzzle thing. I really do think that Proverbs can be a little overwhelming. There's just a lot of independent adages. And it's not until we read the book successively and in its entirety that we're able to see that there is a structure here. We're given some internal structure. There's some comments made indicating, okay, we're moving on to another section. For example, at the end of chapter 9, we see something like that at 25. We see something like that at 30. We see something like that at 30, verses 1 through 9. So there is some movement there, but you have to be a dedicated reader, and you have to read through it in its entirety, or you won't see some of those movements. It's also very difficult to pick up motifs if you're only reading sections. So that's the second major thing. And that is, you know, everyone wants to read good devotional literature and get what Christians call nuggets out of it, right? Like, this is a nugget. Look at this. Or sort of their tweet for the day. And by the way, I am not against that. Like, I think that stuff is great and fine, especially when literature is intended to be read that way. Tweets are intended to be read that way. Proverbs that is, the book of Proverbs is not intended to be read that way. It was compiled as a book and should be read as a whole. It's not always going to be read as a whole, but it should be read as a whole. And even the Proverbs that seem disconnected within the context of the book, they're still within the context of the book. So they have to be understood not only within the section in which they're being, or in which they appear, the book as a whole, but also I would say wisdom literature and the Old Testament, and then also the biblical canon. So there, it's much easier for us, and I think sometimes much more gratifying for Christian readers, to read a brief section to sort of get the nugget for the day, or the thing that they will tweet out, and be content with that. I just want to reiterate, this is not reading, you know, the Bible is not an elitist activity. I'm not saying, you know, they don't understand it. That's not what I'm saying. What I am saying, however, is that we all can become better readers, and becoming a better reader is steps that we take to be, step one to becoming a better reader is slowing down and permitting the biblical text to tell us how we should engage with it.
Let's kind of recap that by like putting it in a real life context. There's an individual, say, in your church. He's doing the read through the Bible in a year plan. Let's call him Todd, right?
And let's don't call him. Why would we call him Todd?
Yeah, let's call him Todd.
Todd reads through the Bible in a day.
Yes, that's right. That's right. This individual gets to the book of Proverbs. It's a chapter a day. And it just feels like overwhelming, because there's something about the family. There's something about the tongue. There's something about, and so you're suggesting that a good strategy for him is just like scale back the expectations that there might be like 28 possible tweets. Be content with one, but still it's important to read that chapter or multiple chapters.
You know, Todd, I would say, first of all, if someone is going through a Bible reading plan and that Bible and they're committed to it, and that Bible reading plan says read a chapter of Proverbs a day, read that chapter of Proverbs a day. I have to just say, the goal of writing a book like this is actually to get people to engage more, not less. So I don't want to say no. Don't engage at all, because you're not going to get it if you don't engage the way I'm telling you. That's not what I want to do. I want to encourage people, read that chapter, read two chapters, but we have to read those chapters successively. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean in order, but it does mean when we read successively, we know that there's something that comes before and there's something that comes after. And so that does help us understand. If we're reading that chapter successively, we do know that that what we're reading on that particular day is not just there by itself. We can't understand it if we just sort of leave it by itself. You know, we have to continue to read, and we work from reading successively to reading entirely. We want to read the entirety of the book and take everything that we've read as much as possible into consideration in our interpretation, even of smaller sections.
That's good. Let's take a quick break. And during that break, if our audience could read the whole book of Proverbs, that would be really, really helpful for everyone.
And my book at the same time.
And then pick up that. But let's start with Dominic's book.
Right.
So we'll take a quick break. We'll be right back to chat with Dominic a little bit more specifically about how Proverbs can engage a post-Christian, post-truth world, and also how it can affect us as pastors, leaders, and ministers.
Hey, my name's Justin, and I'm in the Master of Divinity program through Western Seminary's Global Campus. One of the things I've loved about studying at the Global Campus is the online live class format. In an online live class, I have the flexibility to study from anywhere, but also a chance to interact in real time with my professors and the other students in the class once a week. To learn more about Western, visit westernseminary.edu. Now, back to the show.
Well, welcome back. We are here with Dominic Hernandez. We are talking to him about his book, Proverbs, Pathway to Wisdom. And this is Food, Trucks, and Babylon. Here's our question from Babylon for you, Dom. Why the Bible's path to wisdom when mine seems to be going just fine?
Why the Bible's path to wisdom when mine seems to be going just fine. Okay. I think I get the question. You're saying someone's asking me, why should I follow the Bible or something like that when I'm doing perfectly fine?
That's right.
Well, I think that that is one of the questions that people frequently get, right? There's plenty of people that are living perfectly fine lives. They know nothing about the Bible. They know nothing about this Jesus character. And I think that actually, to be completely honest with you, it's a way that many Christians live to a certain extent. At least people that attend some churches would, you know, they live perfectly fine lives and pay very little attention to the Bible or to the scriptures, to Jesus overall. I mean, just think where there is, lots of people living in prosperous situations and are willing to even use the name of Jesus to do evil. This is not just an issue for people in Babylon per se. This is an issue that people within the context of the church also think about and struggle with. And I think there are a couple things to think about with this question. First of all, I think we need to define what wisdom is. The Bible, that is the book of Proverbs, clearly indicates that the pathway to wisdom is this way, this trajectory of fearing the Lord, and that one of the things that happens as we're walking on this pathway to wisdom is that we're honoring God, and that becomes one of the things that we enjoy doing, and we continue down that pathway. We honor God by following the way that he has set out for human beings to follow. And this is something that ends up bringing great joy, ultimately brings great joy to those that believe in God. It doesn't mean that life is easy or happy or always prosperous. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I would say, and I would challenge this question and say, what does it mean when you say that your pathway to wisdom is going, or your wisdom is perfectly fine? Do you mean that you are prospering? Do you mean that you have good stuff in life? What does that mean? Because biblical wisdom and fearing the Lord and bringing honor to God looks significantly different than what it looks like to be wise in the eyes of the world, or even to be prospering in the eyes of the world.
Yeah, I think that's really helpful. And sort of maybe to move this a little bit out of the food truck pod, mm-hmm. and maybe into the church or into the believer's life. One of the things I really appreciate that you do in the book is you actually engage the question that I think that's on a lot of people's minds, maybe after the first time through the book of Proverbs, maybe several times through. And that is, what do we do when we feel like the book of Proverbs isn't working for us? Like, what do we do in response to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good. So what I tell you, I think this could have been an additional book, to be completely mm-hmm. honest with you, because of how we end up reading the Proverbs. So let's go back to one of the questions that you asked a little while ago concerning how we read the Proverbs. And we talked about the reading a chapter a day. I think maybe another scenario or a frequent scenario is that many Bible readers will read like a proverb a day, or a proverb to make them feel good, or they'll memorize a proverb that's applicable to a situation, maybe a situation, a life situation or something like that. And then sometimes that proverb doesn't work, right? And I think some of the most well-known ones are proverbs that have to do with children, raising children, you know, particularly those proverbs that seem to indicate that if you discipline a certain type of way, that a child's gonna turn out a certain way. Mm. And also, this is the major sort of theological issue for some people. And that is those proverbs that seem to suggest that if you honor God, you're gonna get good stuff in life. And if you don't honor God, you're gonna like get punished in life. And those proverbs don't always seem to pan out the way that they just sound at the surface level. We've already talked a little bit about how to read those types of problems. We can go back to that if you want. But to answer your question more specifically, excuse me?
Just keep rereading the Proverbs, keep working through them. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the first thing that we have to do that, you know, I mean, we have to just admit that we're not all knowing. We don't know exactly how all of these situations are going to turn out in the end. We haven't reached the end, whatever that means, whether that be now or later. I mean, we just don't know. So we have to just admit, even as we read the Proverbs and some of these Proverbs don't seem to work, we don't know how this is all going to turn out. And then another thing is that we have to check we have to check the motives of our heart when we wonder, hey, wait a sec, why is this not working out the way that I expected it to work out? For example, let's just briefly talk about the wicked being punished. Why is it exactly that we want to see the wicked punished? I mean, we as people actually we benefit from God being patient and loving to us when we're in our sin. Why is it that we want to see the wicked punished? Why are we so insistent that, no, the wicked need to be punished in this life when we have benefited so much from what we would call God's grace, right? So we just need to check the motivation of our hearts. And then also we need to read the Proverbs again. I think that some of these expectations can come from misperceptions of what the Proverbs are actually saying in their literary context, in the context of the book, in the context of biblical wisdom and ancient Near Eastern wisdom and the biblical canon in general. We have to go back and start putting the puzzle back together again, and hopefully will understand them better the next time around and be able to apply them better.
That's good.
You know, I tell my hermeneutics classes too, that when we're looking at Proverbs, we have to remember the covenantal context in which they were written. And so all of those prosperity rewards, well, those are kind of hardwired into, you know, like a Deuteronomy 28 sort of thing. And we're, as Christians, we're under a different covenant right now with different kinds of rewards and blessings as well. Does that have anything to do with it? Or am I just totally falsely teaching my
student? I don't think you're a false teacher.
Okay, thank you.
I don't think you're a false teacher.
That's right. That's right. Thank you for this.
I'll interview you next, but I don't think you're a false teacher.
We'll put that on your business card.
Todd, I made reference a couple of times just to the Torah in general, but Deuteronomy 28 and the blessings and the curses, there's a very clear connection, not just as far as understanding the covenant, but also the thematic connections that you see in those chapters. We see so many proverbs that speak to the same things. So I do think that there's a very strong connection. I was saying Torah in general, but yes, more specifically Deuteronomy 28.
Yeah, good. Really quickly, for some people, they might be confused. They'll read Proverbs, sometimes consecutive Proverbs, and it feels like they're contradictory. The most famous of which is Proverbs 26, 4 and 5, answer not a fool according to his folly, lest you be like him yourself. And then one verse later, answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes. So
what do we do with that contradiction?
I don't know if I should answer or not answer the fools that I'm talking about. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
That's right. Just kidding.
Nice. So let's talk about this.
I think he's called you a fool. Oh, okay. All right. Shoot. I shouldn't.
Well, let's talk about this specifically. Let's talk about these two specific proverbs. So this is one. There's a couple of things that we need to learn from here. First of all, we need to learn that as these two proverbs are right next to each other, this should be an alarm should go off in our head. We cannot read these proverbs as all proverbs as promises, right? Because we have two next to each other that are like, what is happening here? So they're clearly situational. And I think that understanding also helps with some of the other proverbs that we just talked about, like the just retribution proverbs, as well as the proverbs that relate to raising children. There are these circumstances and the proverbs needs to fit the circumstance. So let's talk about the proverbs fitting the circumstances here. Hmm. We have one proverb that says answer a fool and another one that says don't answer a fool. So check it out. We get a lot of, Facebook comments and people just reaching out to us saying crazy things about stuff that they've either heard us say or seen us write. And they have very strong opinions and they can write really long diatribes on Facebook about how we're wrong and they completely misunderstand what we're saying. I'm sure that's happened to you gentlemen as professors, but it's just part of what we do. It's part of our job, right? Well, I think that's pretty foolish. And to be completely honest with you, I never answer those types of diatribes, ever. It doesn't matter if they come via email or via Facebook, I won't respond to those. So don't answer that type of foolish nonsense according to its folly, I guess we could say in sort of a contemporized version of that proverb. However, I just told you all not so long ago that I am the father of a 10-year-old boy. And we let's just say for a second, he comes home from school, he sits at his desk and he says, I'm not doing this homework. I'm never going to do homework ever again. There's no way I'm ever going to pick up this pencil to do mathematics homework ever again. Okay. That is absolutely foolish. It's utter nonsense. But he is my son. And situationally, things have changed. He's 10. He's not just trying to rip me on Facebook. He might actually have something going on in his heart. He might have a heart issue that he's dealing with. And I, same person that ignores the guy on Facebook, am going to sit down and try to reason with that foolish nonsense. I'm going to do my best. And so we have here two proverbs in different situations, both equally true, both equally applicable, but the situations have changed.
That's really helpful. Thanks. Hey, one more detail from your book. When you get to Proverbs 31, and what what do we do with Proverbs 31? You say that this Proverbs 31 woman is a warrior woman. You also say that she's the embodiment of wisdom. I'd love for you to explore this. And then also help like the guys here who probably, when they get to Proverbs 31, by guys, I'm talking about men, right? They get to Proverbs 31 and they either check out or they think, okay, so this is who I'm supposed to marry, or why is my wife not measuring up to this?
Yeah, yeah, great. So honestly, as far as my book is concerned, this is probably the part that I'm most proud of, that I'm happiest that I got to write, for a couple of reasons. You know, sometimes I just heard Russell Moore say in an interview that sometimes you don't know what you think about things until you actually write them. You're writing them for a book. And I think I feel this way about Proverbs chapter 31, verses 10 through 31, more specifically. I always felt uncomfortable with sort of traditional interpretations of this. They weren't consistent. And as I sat down to think about this, I really wanted to work some of what I perceive to be inconsistencies out.
What would those traditional interpretations be? Like this is the Hebrew superwoman or what?
Okay. So let me actually break that down. So at the beginning of the chapter, I start off with an illustration talking about my mother.
Yeah, and it was fantastic, by the way.
Thank you. And my mother, you know, had four biological kids and then subsequently adopted three children. So we have seven. There's seven of us. But my mother's been a single mother her entire life. And I think if you look at sort of the types of things that my mother has had to do raising seven children, that a lot of the things that my mother had to do raising us are a lot of the traditional, they fit a lot of the traditional interpretations of Proverbs 31, basically being a superwoman, which actually my mother is a superwoman. I think that she's a warrior woman, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's an appropriate, not only is it a good translation of Eshet Chayil, but I also think the Hebrew Eshet Chayil, but I also think it's exactly, it depicts how many women have lived their lives. However, I have to jump in and say, I think it's so appropriate to look at women like my mother and say, wow, she's amazing, Eshet Chayil, warrior woman, and give them their proper respect. And at the same time, and this is to answer the question now, Todd, at the same time, recognize that we're dealing with something a little bit more profound than just sort of this woman that works really hard. We have to remember that the Proverbs are literature. They're beautiful literature. And they're all of these sections, all of these Proverbs are put together at the end of the day as a book. And by the time you get to the end of the book, if you read through successively entirely, you get to the point where you as a reader are kind of thinking, I wonder what it looks like to see all of these principles embodied. And that's when this Eshet Chayil, this warrior woman, comes out, not as a literal figure of what it looks like to be an authentic woman. I don't think that that's what this poem is doing at all. What I think it's doing is it's giving us an idea of what all of these principles that we've been reading about in the book of Proverbs look like embodied. So that's to answer the part of your question. The other part of your question related to, if I could remember properly, why men shouldn't check out. And here's the thing. There's a double-edged sword here, because if you interpret Proverbs 31 as being about a literal woman and not actually this literary character that's demonstrating what authentic wisdom is, if this is a literal woman in your opinion, then what are men supposed to learn from this woman? And this, you know, men maybe should check out. I mean, the argument could be that they should check out at this section. What about women that never get married or aren't married? What about women that don't have children? Or how about women that can't have children? How should they understand this text? How is it intended to be? Is it intended to be applicable to their lives? And I would say that those are some of the things that really caused me to be uneasy, particularly as a man that will never be able to be this warrior woman, this Mm-hmm. What is it that the author is actually doing at the end of the book? And I think that we have really a climax that's foreshadowed throughout the entirety of the book of Proverbs.
That's good. That's really helpful. So just real quick, I mean, is there a reason why this is a woman in a highly patriarchal society?
That's a really good question. And the short answer is I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I will say I'm not sure about part of sure. I can give you another. I'm not sure why this is specifically a woman. What I will say is that this is a woman that has been foreshadowed as we go through the book of Proverbs. So the fact that a woman shows up at the end that's not surprising to us. I'm not sure why the author of the book of Proverbs used this woman throughout, but you know, we see this woman and some of the rhetorical connections, the connections in language showing up earlier in the book.
That's really good. What does the book of Proverbs have to say to our cultural moment, our current cultural moment with social justice, racial justice sort of swirling around? What does Proverbs say to the issue of justice that could speak directly into our current cultural context?
Well, the book of Proverbs is filled with adages that mention that touch on issues of biblical justice here. I mean, all you have to do is just a cursory reading of the book of Proverbs, and you're going to see how the author is concerned about taking care of the widow, not taking advantage, for example, of the widow, not taking advantage of poor people, not taking advantage of orphans and the like. So, and these things, to harp on sort of a motif of our conversation, they're all issues that we see from earlier parts of ancient Israel's history and other writings. We see the same types of issues showing up in the prophets. So yes, the writer of the book of Proverbs is very, very interested in issues of what we can call biblical justice, caring for those that are weak in society, caring for those that are not in positions of privilege that can easily be taken advantage of. Proverbs like that are scattered throughout the entirety of the book.
Yeah, I love it. We don't do this often, but you have a passage in at the end of your book. I think you're sort of reflecting on Proverbs 11:21 that talks about an evil person will not go unpunished. The offspring of the righteous will be delivered. You write, and I think it's really, really helpful. You write, a desire for order and justice is natural, but turning into a fool in the pursuit of that just retribution is unjustifiable. Rejoicing in the evil that befalls those who do us wrong is reviling in their suffering, are not supported in the book of Proverbs. Where did that come from? How is that applicable to our day to day?
Well, I think this is an extension, or maybe even from a section of something that we talked about earlier, which is the issue of just retribution, mm-hmm. And that is, you know, generally speaking, we do desire for there to be justice. And that is a very good and a very right thing as per the sections of the Old Testament that I just mentioned. And our God is a just God, right? And we see God telling people that there are going to be consequences for their disobedience throughout the – and then we see God carrying out the disobedience, for example, on the people of Israel, and then carrying out judgment upon the people that actually carried out judgment upon the people of Israel, right? So we see this, and it seems this is very much ingrained to us. We want to see just retribution. But at the same time, we also have to check our disposition, just the condition of our hearts as we think through these issues of just retribution. Why is it that I want to see just retribution? Is it because I want to conform to the character of God? Mm. Or is it because I want to see my enemies suffer? Mm. And I think that is a really important thing, particularly for Christian people in positions of power and authority, particularly for privileged Christian people, because we are in positions in which we can carry out to a certain extent what we would consider to be retribution, or what we might consider to be retribution upon others. We actually can enforce what we consider to be justice. And we just have to make sure that we're checking the conditions of our hearts as we think through this issue of retribution.
You say in your book that the book of Proverbs instructs us as we journey alongside the wise on our pathway to wisdom. Is wisdom the destination or the goal of the book of Proverbs, or is there something else behind that wisdom?
Right. So we read at the very beginning. This is a great question, Todd. Read at the very beginning of the book of Proverbs, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. And so the fear of the Lord and wisdom are sort of intricately tied together throughout the entirety of the book. As you're fearing the Lord, you're gaining more wisdom, but you're also continuing to revere God more, and you're wanting to walk further and further down this pathway. So it seems that wisdom is attainable, yet never completely attainable, as you continue to fear the Lord and continue to walk. So notice, I tried to be creative. This book is called Proverbs: Pathways to Wisdom. Notice you're constantly walking toward wisdom as you fear the Lord. It's not Proverbs how to attain wisdom. Mm-hmm. We're all on this pathway. We're all in a trajectory insofar as we fear the Lord, and we continue to grow. We could even say in our not just cognitive knowledge of the Lord, but also we continue to grow in that wisdom that he provides as we continue to fear and obey.
For our pastors out there that are listening, one of the daunting tasks, I think, is how do I preach the book of Proverbs? What would you tell them? Like, what kind of approach would you sort of, this is a good model, this is healthy. How would you preach the book as a whole? Because I think a lot of us are just like, I'll take this one on the summer, I'll take this one on the during the summer. Yeah. But the whole book, how would you?
Yeah. Well, I love expositional teaching, and I think that all books should be taught in the. So let me just jump on this real quick as an Old Testament professor, right? Let's just do this the right way, and let's talk about teaching expositionally throughout the entirety of the scriptures. It is something that must be done. We must teach the full counsel of God, not just the red letters or Romans and Galatians. But the entirety of the counsel of God, because we actually believe that all of the scripture is inspired. We believe it's all breathed out by God, right? So that includes Galatians and Romans, but it also includes Ecclesiastes and the genealogies. So we have to teach all of this. Now clearly, we have to do so, like any good teacher, anybody that's a teacher, in developmentally appropriate ways for the people that are actually there with us, working through, like living life with us. And I think that one of the ways that we do this, first of all, is we have to pick a setting in which that can facilitate those people that are with us, that are studying the book with us, being most receptive to this type of literature. So here's what I mean by that. Sunday mornings, a lot of churches, and if I could say it like this, just sort of paint with a broad brush, Sunday mornings, a lot of churches in North America are like on these very strict time schedules where there's, I teach in churches and I get handed like a piece of paper that says you have like 32 minutes to teach the sermon. And then, we're going to worship for 6 minutes and then we're going to shake hands for 38 seconds. And you're like, whoa, if you're in that type of setting, teaching expositionally through the Proverbs is going to be difficult. It's that type of setting doesn't facilitate really working through some of the difficult words and sayings and the jumping around that we talked about. So the setting might have to change maybe to a Wednesday night or a Sunday night study or maybe a home group in which you go through the Proverbs together, maybe with a pastor, a teacher, a leader, something like that, and you go through the entirety of the book. if the goal is to go through verse by verse, chapter by chapter, there are ways in which it can be done, I think, but they don't, like on a Sunday morning, but they don't mm-hmm. normally match up with how church is done in many of our contexts. And so I think the book still needs to be taught, but because of how we normally do church on Sunday morning, maybe we need to move it to a time in which we can, in which we're less, you know, we're less held captive by the clock, and we're able to sit and maybe even field questions and talk through some of the Proverbs with our congregations.
Good. Well, let's say a pastor though is just committed to, I'm going to work through some Proverbs and maybe topical or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm going to do that on a Sunday morning, like I normally would. But they're not quite sure how to connect that to Jesus and the gospel. And they want to preach the gospel Sunday after Sunday. They believe exactly what you said about all the Bible, the full counsel of God. But how do they get to Jesus and the gospel without making it like this freakish Frankenstein appendage sort of thing? You know, just an add-on at the end to make it Christian.
That is the $64 million question, right? No.
You didn't tell me that was your price for coming on the show.
Yes.
I think it's actually 64,000, but you know, inflation and everything like that. But
that's right.
But let's talk about that. You know, in all sincerity, we have to ask maybe a question before the question, and that is, can we be faithful and teach the Bible the goodness of God and the trajectory towards salvation from the Old Testament, from books like Proverbs, and still consider that faithful teaching without necessarily adding the Frankenstein appendage thing that you mentioned? Is that considered faithful? And I think as we go through books like Proverbs, I think we can be faithful teachers of the Word of God. I think we could be faithful ministers of the gospel without adding a Frankenstein thing at the end. I really think that we can teach. We have to recognize, I think, as teachers, that there are going to be sections of the Old Testament in which we need to point people in the right trajectory, because God is good, and we are on the timeline, the history of redemption. And so we continue to point people in the right direction, but we're going to have a difficult time calling it expositional teaching, I think, if we sort of add on these appendixes at the end of maybe texts that don't necessarily utilize the rhetoric that we want to when we preach the gospel.
Last question here. If you could summarize the book of Proverbs for a post-truth, post-Christian world, what would you say to them in a sentence or two?
So when you say post-truth, post-Christian, you just mean someone that doesn't believe anything, like a nun, someone that just thinks, I mean,
Pretty much so.
Yeah.
You know, I probably wouldn't try to summarize the book of Proverbs. I'd jump to Jesus. Am I allowed to say it like that? I mean, am I allowed to do that? You know, I'm not answering your question. I haven't evaded any question up to this point, except that one. And here's why, though. No, really. I mean, let the record know. We haven't cut any of my answers, right? But let me just say this. If I got 1 minute with someone that really doesn't believe anything, I'm going to talk about Jesus. I'm not going to talk about my Proverbs book. I'm not going to try to summarize. I'm going to be as clear as possible about the person and the work of Jesus the Messiah. So that's what I'm going to do.
That's great. What would you say?
About Jesus.
Yeah.
I would be very clear about humankind's natural separation of God as a result of being born in sin and subsequently sinning, separating themselves from God, who is holy and righteous and has a wrath, but Jesus settled it. He settled it once and for all by giving himself on the cross, and through him, by the power of God, the Holy Spirit, we're able to be united with God the Father. And that was about 38 seconds. But I think that's what I need to teach. If I got 1 minute with someone that doesn't believe anything, we need to keep that message there.
That's brilliant. Amen. Great place to end. Thank you so much for being with us, Dominic. It has been a joy. We are very excited about this book. We are very excited about just having you on the podcast.
And we can give away a couple copies too.
Yeah. We would love to
give away. Can I have one?
We can send you one. Absolutely. We happily send you one. So just check out Proverbs, Pathways to Wisdom with Abington Press by Dominic Hernandez. And hopefully we'll be able to talk to you soon.
It's been really a pleasure to join you all. Thank you very much for inviting me, and I look forward to doing it again, hopefully.
Yeah, it's been a joy. Thanks.